Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we're about to have a people's debate on legalizing up to an ounce of recreational marijuana possession in New York City, as proposed by Comptroller and Mayoral Hopeful John Liu. On Wednesday's show, I asked Mariela Salgado from Noticias 41, the Univision station, to do some political analysis of this just before we go to your calls. And she thought it would be unpopular in the Latino community. Listen.
Well, I think it's a risky proposal for him. My side of the spectrum, the Hispanic community that I report to, they tend to be very conservative, Hispanics, when it comes to social issues or things like that. On the medical part, I think that he probably will find the support, but when it comes to a personal usage, I think that could be not great for him among the Hispanic voters.
So reporter Mariela Salgado from Univision affiliate Noticias 41 here in New York on a show earlier this week. Listeners, how about you? I wonder if this would break down at all along racial and ethnic lines. Hispanic listeners, where are you on legalizing marijuana for recreational use? Are you where Mariela predicts the majority would be? 212-433-WNYC. Or anyone else? Would you support this idea? Would you oppose it? Let's have a people's debate. 212-433-9692. And let's put on the air together Rachel in Manhattan and Steve in Airmont, New York. Rachel, thanks a lot for calling in.
Hi, thanks.
Let me just say hello to Steve. Steve, hi.
Oh, sorry.
Brian, hi, big fan.
Steve,
big fan of the show.
Steve, Rachel, Steve.
Hi.
Hi, Steve.
Rachel.
Hi, Rachel. Rachel, go for it.
Okay, so my stance is that I absolutely am for medical marijuana. I do have friends in Colorado, and I see how it's a little bit more advanced out there. And there was a caller that called in earlier in regards to that, saying that you can get different strains for different things, and it's absolutely true. My concern with medical marijuana is that some individuals that actually might need or recreational marijuana is individuals that actually might need medical marijuana turn to sort of like, I guess, alternative routes to getting it, and that sort of sucks them in, and so it becomes more recreational. And I've been in contact with people and in intimate relationship with someone who just completely abused it, but I believe actually needed it medicinally. So my thing is that, you know, maybe in the future at some point, if medicinally it's kind of like a wide open thing, like it can be prescribed and it's more normalized, it's not so sensationalized, that there won't be so much of a, I guess, an allure to, you know, that type of lifestyle or feeling like, you know, they're just pro pot and instead of actually getting some type of relief for whatever, even whether it's emotional disturbance or, you know, more
help
of
that
a
they need. Yeah. Mayor Bloomberg, in opposing John Liu's proposal, said something similar about if it's out there for medicinal use, then recreational use will also increase with negative consequences in the community. But, Steve, you're calling to support the idea of legalizing recreational marijuana, right?
Well, Brian, first, let's just say, let's move away from the age of prohibition. All right, that's number one. Number two, let's look at it from, you know, let's unclog the courts with these unnecessary small levels of possession cases that can actually be held against people in the future. And third, let's look at it clinically and scientifically. We have an abundance of scientific research that clearly shows that marijuana is far safer and far less addictive than alcohol. All right? This is established scientific fact. Now, the problem, not a problem, but there's one aspect
of the
legalization.
One sec, Rachel.
That I have a problem.
Sure.
Go ahead, Steve. Finish your thought.
That I would like to address is that while one is, I think, less impaired when they've when they've ingested marijuana, they are still impaired, and there needs to be some kind of sobriety field test that they need to develop because...
To use with drivers and things
impaired.
Like that.
So that's,
yeah.
There you go.
Okay. Rachel, go ahead.
Yeah, so I just want to address what you said about, you know, the scientific research behind it, you know, and, you know, there's plenty of research promoting it as a medicinal drug, but there's also research that states that, you know, back in the day in the 70s and 60s, you know, the HTC content, the actual, like, you know, what gets you high is, it used to be 5%, and then there's pot really in New York City, especially coming down from Canada and other places, that actually goes up to 25% to 30%. You know, I don't know that it's actually that high, but it's definitely a lot higher than it used to be. And so that right there is the addictive quality. And what I think is that you know, let's be real. Everybody has you know, smoked a blunt before. But I think for people with addictive personalities, this is where kind of the conundrum comes when you have something that is addictive and is, you know, legalized like that, it kind of makes it, it's good that it's a taboo thing for somebody who's...
Because you're worried about increasing the rate of addiction.
Right, right.
In
and
the city.
I mean,
Steve, you want to come
right.
back on that?
Yeah, I do. You know what? It sounds like I'll make the analogy to climate change denial.
Okay? Oh, that's not fair, is it?
It's almost a joke. Listen, the actual clinical addiction rate to marijuana is, I mean, it's very low. It's incredibly low.
Well, there is some. I mean, we had an expert on who recently who said, as he advises Washington State on implementing their new legal marijuana law, that there is some addiction to marijuana, even though it's not physically addictive in the same sense as heroin, say, where you would go through physical withdrawal symptoms. There is addiction, and they would have to be prepared for the fact that some addiction to marijuana will increase. But, Rachel, the analogy that I would make, rather than to global warming, if I was going to push back on your position, would be to alcohol. That, sure, we know there's some alcoholism, but it's worse to have prohibition.
Right. Well, so the
and
thing is...
Hang on. Rachel's turn. Rachel,
I mean,
go ahead.
A far higher level of
excuse
alcohol.
Me, Steve, thank you.
I mean, it's not even close.
I thought a people's debate was going to be more civil than a politician's debate. Rachel, go ahead.
So here's the thing is I think that you won't see as much official, quote, I guess, I don't know what you would call official addiction to marijuana because... Addiction, like Steve, like you're saying, not Steve, sorry, like you're saying, it's not as visible. Here's how it shows up. It shows up in lack of ambition, in you know, not graduating from college, in working some like half rate job. And yeah, you can work while you're using marijuana like frequently. I'm talking about people who use marijuana 2, 3, 4 times a day, and they still go through, you know. A day working. These are people who maybe they do need it medicinally, maybe they don't. But if they need it medicinally, they should be able to have access to it medicinally. Mm-hmm. If they want to use it recreationally, it should be used, you know, like with so much regulation because it shouldn't be abused. It creates a lot of people who are just sitting there on the streets, just not really doing anything with themselves. And I think it's not really great for our society. We need more people who are ambitious, who are going to, you know, vote. These are people who are, you know, not to say that all, you know, people who smoke pot, because there's, you know, I went to Cornell University. There's people on the way left wing who would be on the
opposite. I think we just learned in Colorado and Washington that people who smoke pot vote in those referenda.
Yeah.
But Steve, you can get the last word.
Well, my goodness, I didn't know I was going up against a fellow alum.
Oh, okay.
indeed. But so and quite frankly, you know, just to say that the big drugs on campus were the kind that are over the counter. Let's face it.
Absolutely.
Admit it. And you know, and the people who were using marijuana recreationally, it was exactly that. Okay, they were, and it was not necessarily impairing their ability to do what one had to do academic, you know, to succeed. Let's face it. So I'm gonna stick to my science. I was a science guy, Rachel. So I'm gonna stick to my guns.
We
here.
Are gonna
okay?
have to leave it there. But I've got an idea on homecoming weekend. Cornell should have you back
and I'm not big on that stuff,
recreate the debate.
But Rachel, thank you, and thank you, Brian.
Thank you, and Rachel,
okay,
thank you.
Thanks so much, guys.
All right, that was great. There you go, a people's debate on John Liu's proposal to legalize up to an ounce of marijuana for recreational personal possession in New York City. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and I want to follow up now on yesterday's interview with New York State Board of Regents Chancellor Merrill Tisch about the plunge in standardized test scores, and take calls from teachers now about how you're being trained for the Common Core curriculum. Teachers, 212-433-WNYC. We'll replay a couple of clips from Chancellor Tisch in a minute. But teachers, if you've been trained in the Common Core curriculum for any subject area or any grade, how have you been trained? And do you think it'll make things better? 212-433-9692. We have the advantage of your company, teachers, at this time of day during summer vacation, I know. So we're taking advantage of it. And let's have a little mid-August educator summit before you dive back into the fray. 212-433-9692. WNYC or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. If you have been trained for the Common Core curriculum in any subject or at any grade level, tell us about it. What's different? And do you think it's an improvement, test scores or no? 212-433-9692. Now, for those of you who don't know, this year's New York State standardized test scores came out last week, and as predicted, they had a pretty shocking drop in scores statewide compared to recent years, which could be a good thing in a certain way. This is certainly what the officials argue. Remember the scandal a few years back over how the tests had gotten dumbed down so they would look like more students were doing grade level work and it would look like the state schools were improving under the No Child Left Behind law? So they discovered that and acknowledged it, and they had to make the tests harder. And more kids had to score badly in order to reflect reality. I think that's a pretty well accepted fact. But at the same time, the state adopted President Obama's new paradigm for education in general, known as the Common Core curriculum. And the goal seemed at once to make sure more students are ready for college when they graduate from high school with specific knowledge that will help them avoid remedial courses that is such a big problem at CUNY and SUNY and other schools. And it's also designed to make students think critically more and not just memorize. At least it's supposed to. So I don't know if those two things are contradictory, learning more facts to avoid remedial courses and learning to think critically more, but that's what they say. And in fact, here is a clip of Chancellor Tisch from yesterday's show. This was right near the end of our conversation after a middle school teacher had called in to say he didn't like drill and kill teaching to the test. And the chancellor said the core curriculum, even with these harder tests, could mean less drill and kill, less teaching to the test if they do it right. Listen.
I would say that this new push to Common Core will change the paradigm of testing. For a decade, testing has been driving instruction and curriculum. This obsession with drill and kill has been driving what kids are exposed to in the classroom and how classroom time is used. If we start to focus on critical thinking and the development of critical thinking, I believe instruction and curriculum and best practice will drive the test. That is a paradigm shift, and that is why we're taking this on.
So the better tests can coexist with not teaching to the test, drill and
kill. Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Let's hope so. So what do you think? Teachers, what's your experience if you have been trained in any aspect of the Common Core curriculum? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And I'll play you one other clip of Chancellor Tisch. And I thought that was a very striking statement, by the way. There was the chancellor herself yesterday on the show denouncing the drift toward drill and kill teaching, even as she supports a lot of standardized testing. So can those two things coexist? And she did acknowledge that the preparation for the new test, for the Common Core curriculum, has been uneven.
the preparation across the state has been uneven. 2.5 years ago, New York State announced that we were shifting to the Common Core. In some districts, there has been a magnificent amount of capacity building around professional development to teach to the Common Core. Other districts, not so much.
And to my ear, it's kind of a tragedy for those kids who scored low this year because their districts or their schools have not had good training yet, especially if you're in fourth grade or seventh or eighth grade and you're about to be judged on your tests for your middle school or high school applications. But again, the chancellor was very candid in acknowledging that the training has been uneven so far in just this first year or two of implementing the core curriculum. So teachers, if you have been trained in any aspect of the core curriculum, call up and tell us what that training has been, what's really going to be different than the old way of teaching, and do you think it's going to be an improvement? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, and we'll take your calls right after this.